I think we've got a very, very clear proposition, which isn't about just asking for more money. It's about delivering better transport at a more effective price.
Welcome to Freewheeling, the free-thinking podcast about moving forward faster. My name's Thomas Abelman, and each week I'll bring you fresh voices, new ideas, and unconventional thinking. So let's get started now with this week's edition of the Freewheeling podcast.
If my guest this week has a favourite colour, it must be yellow. He's painting every bus in Manchester yellow, he's buying over 1,000 yellow bikes, and he has ambitions for yellow trains to complement his existing yellow trams. In recent years, it's felt like transport and mobility has been in something of a holding pattern, but that's not been true in Greater Manchester. Vernon Everett is Commissioner of Transport for Greater Manchester and joins me on the Freewheeling podcast. Vernon Everett, welcome. And is your favourite colour yellow?
No, it isn't really, but it's a very striking colour and it's a great livery for sending a message, I suppose, across all the modes of transport to say, you know, this is part of the B network, come and use us.
I've got to ask, what is your favourite colour, would you say?
I don't know, red and white, I suppose.
I thought you'd say that. There's an ex-London Transport man there.
Well, no. Well, perhaps I should have said black and white, because they're Fulham's colours. And I'm a season ticket holder at Fulham, so there you go.
All right, we'll go.
For the purposes of this conversation, I will go black and white.
We'll go for black and white then. Now, I mean, is it an exaggeration to say that Transport for Greater Manchester really used to be the operator of a tram contract primarily and is now a transport authority? It feels like it's gone through a really big change in the last number of years.
Well, I'm not sure it was ever just quite that, a tram operator. I think it's always had a wider perspective, but it's certainly the case that with the creation of the combined authority in Greater Manchester with the 10 local districts and the mayor, it's gone through a bit of a transformation in the same way as London did when the mayoralty was created in London in the year 2000. And it sort of created a single point of political accountability for something that matters enormously to lots of people, and that's the transport system.
You were at TfL during those early days, weren't you? Has it felt like the early days of TfL?
I wasn't actually. I joined TfL in 2007. So it was already pretty well established. And the first mayor was Ken Livingstone, and there was an enormous amount of integration and consolidation of public transport and increasingly active travel. And the key thing for London, of course, is it just gave that single point of political accountability, which started to make things happen. And I think what you're seeing in Greater Manchester and actually all of the great urban regions of England, you're seeing that happening again with the creation of mayoralties for them and thinking about what an integrated transport network can do for the economy and productivity and all of the other objectives that those authorities have got.
And what's it felt like for you on the inside leading that change as that political accountability become?
I mean, it's great. The mayor and the 10 leaders of the districts and their chief executives have got a very clear vision of what they want and why. So it's not painting everything yellow for yellow's sake. It's because transport is the essential enabler of all of those other policy outcomes, whether that's the creation of more homes, jobs, access to opportunity, leisure, education, and to really start to close the productivity gap. Because as we all know, the distance between London and all of the other cities outside of London really is enormous when it comes to productivity. And I think they've clearly recognised that transport is an enabler of closing that gap and creating better lives for the residents and businesses and people that visit the city region. So it's an absolute privilege to be associated with it. And it's not a complete like-for-like transfer of London, actually. Many of the magic ingredients that makes London's transport network one of the best in the world do translate, like integrated fares and ticketing, high quality services, a focus on customers. I mean, it's not transport for transport's sake. It's about what it enables for the people that use that. And it's also about mode shift, of course. 60% of the journeys in Greater Manchester are undertaken in a car. And it's the other way around in London, 60-40 the other way. So 60% public transport and active travel, 40% car. And in Greater Manchester, we need to even that up a bit. So we're aiming to go from 60-40 to nearer 50-50. It's a million more journeys a day by public transport and active travel. So there's a very clear vision on the part of the city region's leadership about what they want. And I'm just working with a whole bunch of partners, including my colleagues at Transport for Greater Manchester, the bus operators, our tram operator, and increasingly the rail industry, to try and bring all of that together.
And what are the differences between the London model and the Manchester model? In London, you've got Transport for London with a set of responsibilities at a regional level. Then you've got the boroughs with a set of responsibilities. And they're quite separate to an extent, which has its advantages and can sometimes have its disadvantages.
Yeah.
Whereas in Manchester, the combined authority brings all of those local authorities into the combined authority, which when everyone's pulling together, as you just described, sounds great. But what happens if you have a situation where there isn't that shared vision and the various local authorities want to go off in a different direction when it comes to transport? Will it still hold?
So I don't think anyone particularly expects there to be total unity of view across all issues, including those that relate to transport. But in Greater Manchester, you do have a very long tradition, actually, of the local authorities recognising that they're stronger together. And that's been the case regardless of political colour.
No, you're absolutely right, aren't you? I mean, I was thinking about this because one of the interesting questions, and you know, one of the reasons, bluntly, that you're one of the first guests of this series, is that it does feel like there has been a difference in the progress and the pace and the energy and the sense of momentum coming out of Manchester to other cities, when a lot of places have had combined authorities created on roughly the same timelines. But you do see that there has been this tradition in Manchester going back even before the combined authority was created, don't you?
You do. And Sir Bernstein, who passed away recently, and Richard Leese and others, and now with the current group of leaders, it's a very progressive, forward-thinking, sophisticated group of people who understand how all this lot hangs together. And they know, and they do have their disagreements and debates about this thing, you know, whether we should go this route or that route. But once that debate's been had, everybody comes out with a common vision, and we crack on. You look around Greater Manchester, and not just in the centre of Manchester, but around Greater Manchester, you see lots of cranes and lots of economic activity.
You do. Are there any other reasons you think why Manchester is doing so well at the moment, why TFGM has been able to make so much progress compared to other regions?
I think it does stem from that history and from the vision of the current crop of city region leadership. It's also been the case that they fought hard for, they've raised money locally in order to help make it happen. It has been helped with money from government. And like everywhere else in the country, the bus network, for example, does need revenue support and so on. And there's been that forthcoming. But the city region's also been prepared to raise money off its own back through the transport precept and through other means. So in a way, Manchester's actually put its own investment in as well and backed its own horse in this regard, which again is helpful in moving things along. So, you ask any transport operator and they'll say they've never got enough money to do everything they want. You just do, don't you? And it's true. But we've got enough money to get going. And that's what we have been doing with bus franchising and integration of the proposition for customers and try and make things simpler for them, deal with fares. Amazingly, Thomas, you'll know this from London. I mean, a London bus fare is £1.75. 2.5 years ago, when I first started working in Greater Manchester, that could be up to £4. And the intervention by the combined authority to bring that down to £2 has been very significant. So I think the reason why it's doing that is because it's got a very clear vision. They can see how it's connected with the spatial plan for the city region, the employment plan, the economic plan for the city region.
So we talked a bit about the progress that has been made, but not all of my listeners, I'm always surprised at the number of people who listen to this who aren't transport and mobility professionals, which is very kind of them. Give me the elevator pitch for what's already been achieved. What's changed in Manchester in transport and mobility terms in the last few years?
So the Metrolink tram system in Greater Manchester is the biggest in the country, and it's always been operated publicly under a franchise. Carlos Amy operates it at the moment, and if you like, the profit and loss account and everything that goes into and out of that, it has been managed by the combined authority. Now what we're doing is bringing the bus network, which has been operated commercially since the deregulation of 1986. In London, people that live in London have never experienced this because the buses have always been within the control of the authority in London. But that's not been the case elsewhere in the UK. As I mentioned, that was all deregulated in 1986. So we're in the middle, actually, of bringing the Greater Manchester bus network together with that light tram network to provide an integrated system, the yellow that you were talking about at the beginning of this, Tom. So we're doing that in three phases. So 50% of the bus network is now operated by Transport for Greater Manchester, and the final 50% will come across on the 5th of January next year, when the south of Manchester's bus services are brought within the family. And it's at that point that, in March next year, we will integrate all of the fares and ticketing between the Metrolink trams and the buses. So, again, people familiar with London know you just tap and go, and the system does all the clever stuff in the background to charge you the lowest fare. Well, that tap and go type payment will kick in Greater Manchester across the trams and the buses in March. And that's huge. And alongside all of that, as I mentioned, we've driven fares down, we've simplified the fare structure, and we've done all sorts of things to promote the bus network, including introducing family tickets and a number of other products that combine bus and tram journeys. So it's trying to simplify access, if you like, to the transport network. We've made it safer. We've deployed lots of travel safe support officers around Greater Manchester who patrol our bus interchanges and the buses themselves. We've had a clampdown on fare evasion, which is getting us £2 million net more revenue per annum, because we recognise that safety and security is a really big deal, particularly for women and girls in terms of their choice of using public transport or not. And my colleague, gold medal Olympian Dame Sarah Storey, has been forging a path as well with active travel, with the active travel elements of the B network. So this isn't just about public transport. It's also about walking, wheeling and cycling as well, and all of that coming together. So we're offering up to the people and residents of Greater Manchester this vision of an integrated network. And once we've done the buses, we want to get straight into integrating some of the rail, mainly the commuter rail networks that serve Manchester into the B network as well.
How does the money work? So if you're an American city, then it's very clear you raise your own money, you spend your own money, and if you make your bad decisions, you go bust. And in England, we've never quite been able to work out what powers we want local authorities to have. So in theory, there's a lot more risk sitting on the taxpayers of Manchester's shoulders now. You know, let's say there's a big economic downturn and people aren't willing to pay fares to the same degree they were. Does that sit with Greater Manchester taxpayers, or does it sit with national government? How does the money work?
Well, on the revenue funding, it increasingly sits on the balance sheet of the Greater Manchester Combined Authority, but so does the revenue. So the job of the authority is to make the proposition more attractive and drive up revenue so that the net revenues increase. As I mentioned, particularly with things like bus networks, including in London, the bus network is very heavily subsidised or cross-subsidised by other services. So outside of London, all of the authorities will receive some money, including through their bus service improvement plan funds to improve their buses. And from a capital perspective, Thomas, there's something called the City Regional Sustainable Transport Settlement for each region, which gives a very non-trivial amount of money over a five-year period for capital investment, which provides that steady, sustained and stable level of funding for things like introducing bus priority lanes, introducing more active travel facilities, building new bus interchanges. Anyone that's not visited it recently, if you're passing through Manchester, if you're coming to Manchester, go and have a look at Stockport Bus Interchange. Stockport Council have done a magnificent job regenerating the centre of Stockport. And as part of that, they worked in collaboration with Transport for Greater Manchester to build a bus interchange that I would argue rivals anything anywhere else in the country. And that connects up the heavy rail network in Stockport with the buses, with active travel, with walking facilities that take you right into the centre of Stockport town centre. And it's all of those sorts of things that this is actually enabling and making places better, as well as enabling people to move more effectively between them.
And you're absolutely right there, aren't you? There's two big changes in trends in policy in our world that have happened over the course of the last few decades that it's worth pointing to and celebrating. And one is the fact that it's kind of been a rather shaky evolution in lots of small steps here and there. But actually, you know, Network Rail, National Highways, all of the combined authorities do now have this long-term capital funding principle established, which, you know, most other areas of public policy don't have. And it should be something that this sector really wants to cling on to and make sure that that principle is sustained.
Well, there's so many benefits that flow from it. You're actually able to deliver capital programs, you know, more cheaply.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you have that certainty, because you're able to provide certainty to the supply chain, who in turn are able to do things like take on more apprentices, and you're able to buy raw materials and just plan forward in a much more effective way. So that's been a really, really effective, I think. And what we would like to see is more certainty over the revenue funding as well. I think what our offer back to government is that we will reduce the call on revenue funding. So as I mentioned, we carry the profit and loss risk on the bus network as well as the trams now. So it's in our interest to drive up those revenues so that the net cost is driven down. And when it comes to the eight sort of suburban rail lines that we would also like to integrate into the B network, our offer to government is that the subsidy which is currently paid to support those lines will reduce, because we're confident that by integrating we will get more people to use us and the net revenues will go up.
And that links to one of the other things you said, a trend of the last couple of decades that is worth celebrating, which is the fact that transport and place are now thought of as one thing, which again, when I started my career, they never used to be.
Yeah.
And you know, I live in East London, but recently I went up to, you may know it, Springfield Park in Clapton in Hackney, and you get a view back over Walthamstow. I live in Walthamstow. And you can literally see the Victoria line in the landscape ahead of you from the top of the hill, because clump of tower blocks around station, clump of tower blocks around station, clump of tower blocks around station, you know, upgrade to a railway line, new towers go in, generates new demand, provides housing for people. And that kind of integrated thinking just didn't happen when I was a kid.
Yeah. And well, you know, near you, just think about Stratford.
Absolutely.
You know, the Olympics did have quite a lot to do with it, but that's why I was born in and around there, you know. It was literally a pile of rubber tires, and it was transport that was part of the main driver for this, and that's what you want, isn't it? And that gets you into other interesting discussions actually about funding. I mean, if no one would now argue that the Elizabeth line wasn't worth building, it's hugely successful, and yes, it came in a little bit late and somewhat over budget, but no one talks about that anymore, because everything else that the Elizabeth line enables. And I think there's a discussion to come in the next couple of years about how you apply those sorts of funding models outside of London. I mean, you mentioned about the building, you know, in and around the Victoria Line. You could look at the same along the route Crossrail. You've got land value capture. You've got different ways of thinking about financing this thing, because everyone has to be realistic, and there's not a magic money tree anywhere. You have to pay for this stuff somehow. I think the challenge for us all, it's not about raising the money, actually, because there's plenty of capital around to raise. It's the model for paying it back, which is the challenge. But there's now a chance, I think, to have different conversations about that. And in my current context, we really need to go underground at Manchester Piccadilly to unlock capacity and connectivity between Manchester and Liverpool and out across to Bradford and Leeds and Hull, Sheffield, and so on. And I just hope we're able to get into some of those funding discussions, you know, in future about the investment which is needed outside of London as well.
I was in Stuttgart last week, and I don't know if you know Stuttgart, but they had a terminating station not dissimilar to Manchester Piccadilly, and they're now having to basically dig up the entire city centre to create through tunnels to replace it, because they realised that a terminating station is just not good enough for the end of a high-speed line, which is what they've now got from Paris. Yes. And yeah, the level of disruption and cost to having built the wrong station originally. And you feel if you've got new connections coming into Manchester and Manchester knows what it needs, it would be desperately frustrating if that doesn't happen at the same time as all the other infrastructures being built.
Well, I think there's also a matter of practicality, because if you look at the classic rail network that encircles Greater Manchester, it's at full capacity. And the disruption of trying to intervene there would be absolutely enormous for many, many years. And the obvious thing to do is to go underground. You know, people will say, well, that will cost a lot of money. And of course it does. But you that's why we also then need to look at the funding models for how that can be afforded with everybody who benefits making a contribution.
This is a perfect segue to what I want to talk about next, which is all the things that could be coming next. But we're just going to take a very quick break before we do that first. The reason for the break is so that I can tell you, the listener, a bit about Freewheeling the business as opposed to Freewheeling the podcast. In a world in which startups are getting faster and faster, established organizations can feel like they're getting slower and slower. I help organizations like yours get things done faster. If this sounds like something you're interested in, visit www.freewheeling. So yeah, Vernon, come back to Vernon Everett. You were talking then about ambitions for building an underground station in Manchester. And I've done quite a bit of traveling in Europe over the course of recent months. And one thing that always stands out for me is outside London, every English city is so underpowered when it comes to transport compared to pretty much any European city. You know, the Metrolink in Manchester is fantastic, but in most German or most French cities of the size, Metrolink would be in addition to a full-scale metro system, you know, an underground railway system. There'd be a S-Bahn suburban-style system with high frequencies. And you look at the map of transport networks in European cities, and you look at the productivity graphs for European cities, and you look at the productivity graphs for British cities, and you think, this can't be a coincidence. The only productive British city is London, and that's the only one that has proper, dense transport. How do you get the conversation to that point, given that we're so far behind where we, in inverted commas, should be if you look at the European model? Yeah, I read this article in The Economist a few months ago. I don't know if you saw it, but it was quite funny. It was talking across the board, not just in transport terms, about this sort of British public services. We've got such low expectations now that we celebrate things that for everywhere else are normal. And it referred to re-regulation of buses in Manchester and saying, you know, local councils being able to influence bus routes would not be considered an amazing achievement anywhere else in Europe. But actually, it is an amazing achievement in England, because it's been such a long time in coming. So how do we get the conversation from where we are to the conversation we need to be having?
Well, I think you just have to connect up what transport enables. Because again, when you think about what's happening in Greater Manchester, it's about that mobile shift in the jargon that, you know, we always talk about. But it's also decarbonisation and sustainability. Greater Manchester is growing really rapidly. And in order to make that sustainable in the long run. You've got to do that in a way that enables people to move around in different ways. So, you know, the bus franchising is a classic example where we're introducing lots of zero emission buses because, yeah, surface level transport is one of the biggest contributors to greenhouse gases. It also enables people, it enables growth. So I think you have to connect the dots, and it might have been lost a little bit, and maybe not surprisingly as a result of COVID, but suddenly transport was just seen as a cost line, and what it enables and the benefits that it enables hasn't been adequately recognised for some time as a result of that.
And we have a government with a mission to be the fastest growing economy in the G7. I don't see how you can achieve that mission without massive investment in catching up the levels of transport infrastructure outside London in Britain's major cities. I don't see how that's even possible. Is that something you think the government recognises?
If the objective is growth, then transport has to play a key part in enabling it. It's not going to happen any other way. And you have to not only measure success through the profit and loss account of combined authorities or transport operators, you have to measure it in health outcomes, in job outcomes, in the construction of housing developments and commercial developments, industrial developments. You have to measure it in that way. And when you start doing that and connecting those pipes, and none of it that straightforward, actually, if you're just looking at it in isolation, project by project, quite hard to do. But if I look, for example, in the first area of bus franchising in Greater Manchester, where we've seen patronage growth above 5% over the last 6 months. We've seen revenue growth above what we anticipated. We've seen punctuality improve because we've been acting on complaints and customer feedback to improve services. There is more activity. We can demonstrate that there is more activity, and people are using our services to get to their hospital appointment, to get to work, to get to football on a Saturday or whatever it is. And we can start producing the evidence that investment in these areas produces results. But it's quite hard to do. But unless you're prepared to do that and recognise that the benefits of transport fall elsewhere in other policy areas, then it's quite difficult to make progress. But I'm hopeful that we are starting to connect up those pipes again. And certainly the recent announcements, you know, the government recently announced it's making it easier for all authorities to be able to at least look at franchising to see if it's for them. And in that, they recognise that the bus networks around the country are essential enablers of growth. And you can apply that to rail, you can apply that to other forms of transport as well. So I'm hopeful that we are starting to reconnect that logic.
It's all more complex now than it used to be, isn't it? And I'm thinking back to when I was a kid, and you had London Transport, and then you had the rail network, which was British Rail, and you had some bus companies, and that was basically it. And you've now got these far more ambitious mayoralties leading far more ambitious combined authorities. And that creates a whole additional complexity and dynamic around, you know, who's in charge.
Well, government are cracking on with the establishment of Great British Railways, which is really helpful because there will be one body connecting up track and train to be able to have these sorts of conversations with. But actually, those eight lines that I mentioned earlier on that we'd like to integrate, we haven't chosen them for the sake of it. They carry about 30% of the ridership on the rail network across Greater Manchester. And they are, if you like, the major commuter corridors. They are largely contained within Greater Manchester, but not exclusively so. But over the borders where those services start, Buxton, for example, and Southport, there's, political support, you know, for that sort of level of integration. And again, it's not for the sake of it. It's because we're able to sort of put all of that together in a way that makes sense to customers and potential customers. So actually, it's the rail industry that's put together the proposition on the eight lines So Network Rail have got together with TransPennine Express and Northern, who are our two major train operating companies, and the Greater British Railways transition team. And working together, they put together a proposal for how those eight lines could be integrated by the Mayor's ambition of doing that by 2028. So we Greater Manchester would need to contribute some money to making all of that happen. But again, we are confident that from a revenue perspective, we can lower the burden on central government by getting more usage and reducing the call on net revenues. And again, it's not for the sake of wanting to run our own train service. It's because integration within that broader B network, we think will be a direct driver to economic growth. And
so tell me what the future looks like. Give me kind of the two bookends of the ambition. You know, what's the absolute minimum that is going to happen, must happen, in terms of the creation of the B network and investment in transport infrastructure in Greater Manchester over the course of the last decade, say? And what's the absolute most optimistic case? What would be, if everything goes right, what does it look like?
Well, I think in the short run, when you look at Dame Sarah Storey's ambitions for active travel alongside what we're doing on public transport, by 2028, we will have in Greater Manchester something that resembles a London-style public transport and active travel network. It will have, the sort of core ingredients that have made London successful. In the period beyond that, heading out into the 2030s, that's where decisions today will have massive impacts in terms of large infrastructure projects. So we had the last government cancel HS2 to Manchester, and that poses all sorts of questions for what happens next. There is the proposition for a high-speed line between Liverpool and Manchester, and the mayors of the respective city regions have put a board together to put together what that looks like in practice, so that we can crack on with that. It gives rise to questions about the West Coast Main Line connecting London up the west of the country. It raises questions about what happens between Birmingham and Manchester. It raises further questions about what happens across the country, running from, Manchester to, as I mentioned, Bradford, Leeds, Hull, Sheffield, and beyond. I think there are two trajectories, if you like. We're sorting out our own backyard, as are many of the other authorities across the country. The Liverpool City region, West Yorkshire, South Yorkshire, Tyne area now, you're seeing integration plans coming together for their own local public transport and active travel networks. And the next big discussion, therefore, is what happens to the big infrastructure that connects all of those pipes up.
This podcast is all about moving forward faster. What would help Greater Manchester move forward even faster than it's doing?
Well, I don't know. I think we've got a very clear plan and we've got the resources by and large to deliver it. Of course, there is never enough money to do everything you want to do at the speed you'd really like to do it. But everybody is realistic, I think, about the nature of life at the moment. So we're just getting on with things. So I don't feel that there's any great impediment at the moment to us doing this. We've got the tools and resources, and we will have, in fact, completed bus franchising by January next year. And then we need support from the rail industry collectively to then roll into the integration of rail lines. And that includes putting pay-as-you-go ticketing on those eight lines as well. So we do need the support of Great British Railways and the Department for Transport, as we always have, and of course of the Treasury, to enable us to do that. But I think we've got a very, very clear proposition, which isn't about just asking for more money. It's about delivering better transport at a more effective price. And there's also money having been raised locally in order to make that happen as well. So of course we would like more. Of course we would like to move quicker. I'd love to be able to put more buses on. I'd love to be able to get on with putting more orbital routes in around Greater Manchester. We will do that, incidentally, and we do have plans for it, including the bus infrastructure that needs to go in to make all that happen. I would love to be able to get all electric buses in place earlier than the early 2030s. I mean, we're cracking on with that, but of course you'd like to do that faster because that delivers all sorts of other benefits in terms of cleaner air and so on. But is there anything really holding us back? We're getting on with it.
And turning it round, if there was another public sector organisation, could be a transport authority, could be someone else, who's saying, wow, they've got a lot done in Greater Manchester, how have they done that? What would be the key lessons you would teach them in terms of being able to get things done and move forward faster?
I think having a common vision across your political leadership is essential. It's what changed the game in London in 2000. It's helped continue to propel places like Greater Manchester forward and lots of the other great urban regions of the country. So I think it's having that common vision and being able to articulate to the people you need help from about what your priorities are and what the outcomes are going to be as a result of it. Because there's no point asking for multiple things in slightly different forms. You know, you do need to have a very clear view of what this investment is going to deliver in terms of economic productivity and all the other outcomes that you're seeking to achieve in terms of health, education, access to jobs, access to homes. So I think you just really need sharp clarity on all of the things that you're seeking to enable and then describe how the transport elements help make that happen. Unless you have that and unless you have that prioritisation, it's quite hard actually for other people to understand what you're on about.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Final question from me. You're obviously a Londoner in origin. You're not a native Mancunian. What's the big difference you've seen being up in Manchester compared to your native London?
It's huge, different. You know, the level of ambition is huge. Greater Manchester is the same geographic footprint, actually, as Greater London.
Interesting. Just low density.
Although London's got, 9.5 million residents and growing, and Manchester's getting into three, you know, it'll be 3.2 or something in the not too distant future. I think one of the things that you have to realise in places outside of London is that you still have to describe the place of the car in the overall transport edifice, because much of Greater Manchester is actually rural, and you can apply that to a lot of places outside of London. So you can't be dogmatic about this stuff. You have to be able to persuade people that they have a better option to using their car. And that's what a lot of this stuff is about, providing people with better options, cheaper options, and more choice for making their journeys without being dogmatic about car use. Because frankly, in some parts of our region, the only way you can get around is in a car.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, even in London, it's an 80% mode share by public transport target, which means 20% would still be made by car in the long term.
And you've got people who need that simply to be able to get around, because not all public transport is accessible to everybody. You know, we're working hard. You asked me what we would like to go faster on. We would love to go faster on making all of our stations genuinely accessible. Yeah. So that any member of the community can use public transport on demand without having to, you know, to be able to use all of our facilities for everybody in the community would be a fantastic result. And we will make really good progress there, but perhaps not as fast as any of us would like. There are more similarities perhaps than you might think.
Clarity of vision, integration, and just getting on with it.
I think so, yeah.
Fantastic. Vernon Everett, Commissioner of Transport for Greater Manchester, thank you ever so much for joining me.
Thanks for inviting me, Thomas.
Well, that concludes this week's edition of the Freewheeling Podcast. Thanks again to Vernon Everett for joining me, and thank you to you for listening. If you're enjoying the Freewheeling Podcast, do rate and review on whatever podcasting platform you listen on. Share with others so they can listen to it as well. And next week, I will be talking to Colin Knight, from Coventry City Council about how he is reinventing trams from first principles. Very Light Rail next week on the Freewheeling podcast. If you'd like to know more about Freewheeling the business, visit www.freewheeling.info about how I help organisations like yours move forward faster. Have a great week. Goodbye.